This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, middle of the school year, so why not spend a few programs checking in with area school leaders? We're doing that now with Superintendent Jared Corden of Roseburg Public Schools. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
So, I guess overall, how is this school year going for RPS?
I'll tell you what. I'll take one step back. I really think our community should be really proud of its schools, super proud of our kids, our staff, our board. It's a privilege to live here, a privilege to work in our schools, and I hope our community realizes what an asset they have with our students and staff. And we've got great families here, supportive businesses, and overall, to make a long story short, it's going really well this year.
What are some of the positive things you're seeing in the district?
Oh, there's so many things. I guess I would say this. We've got we have a strong expectation of academic achievement and rigor, and we're really seeing an uptick in our achievement, our excitement for learning. We've got a lot of kids involved in school and activities, and that's always great to see. Another thing I'd probably point to would be our career pathways. Really excited about that. Those are continuing to grow. Students at a young age can see a pathway in our community with a job. And that's been really, really exciting to see, exciting for families and kids. And again, a good shout out for our college and also our business partners that are partnering with us on that.
What are some of the more challenging things?
There are always challenges. We want to improve. There's improvement always comes. I'm impatient when it comes to improvement at times. So, we're going to maintain high expectations. Kids aren't always there, but we work on supporting students to make sure they can get there. We've talked about before on the program. We have facilities that are aging. There's some of the infrastructure things we're working on. But overall, we're optimistic, incredibly optimistic about our future and about our current state. And probably the number one thing that keeps me up at night is probably around our facilities.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that because the past few years you've done things like the new softball field at the high school and other things like that. Are there any projects of that nature currently going on?
Well, we don't have any. There are some improvements happening. Most of these are coming through grants. We have finished up this summer, seismic rehab. So there's a seismic rehabilitation grant. We apply for that grant every year. So we finished up at Eastwood and Winchester Elementary. The district also received a $2.5 million seismic grant for the east side of the Votech building at the high school. And there'll be another one we'll apply for next year on that. So we're working on those. We also received, there were a few districts in Oregon that received what's called a Renew Americas grant. And we received that for two schools, Jolane Middle School and Eastwood. And that's to improve air quality in those two schools. Other than that, those are the only construction projects we have going on right now.
What about safety upgrades? Some of that began not long after you started. Where are we at on that?
Yeah, we're effectively completed with this phase. We call them vestibules, which are effectively controlled access design, a capital design. So it really forces everybody to go through one space there. Those are all finished. We've done some other things internally, what we call the Raptor. It's a visitor management system. So we've, some work inside you don't see unless you go visit. And then some exterior things around fencing. But basically all those are finished, and we're really going to be moving toward a next phase, which will include the ability to lock down in the event of a threat outside all exterior doors, for example, or lock down all interior doors in the event there was a threat inside the building. But for now, we're caught up on where we wanted to be, which is the controlled access, visitor management, and some fencing around schools.
The vestibules, and how often do you use that word in a sentence, is interesting because it seems like a challenge at some of the schools that were kind of done with, I don't even know what you call it, kind of that California outdoor footprint.
Yeah, there it's interesting, and we love all our schools, but there really hasn't been like an educational spec where we say, hey, an elementary school will look like this. So they're all designed completely differently. So some of the vestibules, if you go, for example, to Hillcrest, you won't notice anything on the exterior different unless you walk into the building. It's vastly different. Some of the buildings, like Fir Grove, you can see some of the vestibule area there. Some lended themselves to really have an easier, more coherent space when you walk in there architecturally. And some were a little bit complicated, but we're happy to have them there. It just now provides, instead of, to your point, access from four or five different spots where families can come. You know, if you live by a school that has a park and a playground, you could walk in from the back. You can't now, which we acknowledge the inconvenience, yet we also acknowledge the necessary element of controlled access to schools.
And let's see, now you mentioned some of the other things you're planning to do next. Do you feel like, I mean, is this still a pretty big topic in the school community, just the whole area of safety?
I think it will continue to be. I mean, we live in, there's so many great things about living here in 2025. Unfortunately, as it comes to threats for students, that unfortunately continues to be a space where we have to be vigilant. The trick is to make the design not feel like you're living in a prison or that you're not going to be safe by being in there. So we've tried to really fold in some of these safety aspects where it feels comforting to families and kids. It feels normal to. But for those who haven't been in a school, when we do, for example, a lockdown drill, it is... it can be alarming to parents what we ask kids to practice for. I don't think that's going to go away. And so it's how to, again, make kids feel safe and secure, make parents feel safe, that when they drop their kids off, it's the most important thing they have. It's the most important thing in our community. We have a responsibility to make sure they're safe, and that does come with some redesigning our spaces.
Now, also tied into safety is school resource officers, and I know you made a shift there.
We did. And we'll still be really, and we're great for the partnership with RPD. Our city folks have been fantastic. I think they've had, you know, some staffing issues, as many people have around the country. We have signed a partnership with Douglas County Sheriff's Office, who will be providing our school resource office services across the district for all schools. And then we employ two safety officers in our school, as well as one district safety officer.
Now, how many schools are these resource officers normally in?
So they'll really be in all, I mean, they'll really have, every building will have access to them. We have two, and I think the design is to have those officers be both in the high school, I mean, one at a time, but both be familiar with the space. The county officers have not been as familiar with our schools that sit with inside the city. So we have four schools that sit technically in the county: Green, Sunny Slope, Winchester, Melrose. So we want to make sure they're real familiar with our students and our staff, but also familiar with the outlay of the building in the event that there was a, you know, tactical need to help support. So we'll have one at the high school all the time, and the other officer will float and rotate, but primarily probably at the middle schools.
And what kinds of things do they do? Is it basically just monitoring safety?
Yeah, so it's a great question. Sometimes we talk about SROs, and maybe listeners aren't exactly sure. So these are deputies, sheriff's deputies. They are armed, and they are in our buildings to provide support in a variety of different ways. When they're in elementary school, they may be, you know, I'm thinking about down at Green on Carnes Road. So they may be helping support safety around the school with speed zones. They could be just connecting with kids and making sure that kids know that the police are there to support their, you know, them being safe in school. They're there at times for when there is an investigation that needs to happen, an arrest that needs to happen, anything that law enforcement can support, they can support in our buildings. And really, kind of most importantly, they're also there in the event that there is an active aggressor or an active threat to a school.
All right, Superintendent Jared Corden at Roseburg Public Schools. More when we come back. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, Lars Larson coming up at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Dr. Rachel Pokran of Umpqua Community College will be on Inside Douglas County. Superintendent Jared Corden in here with us now talking about how the school year is going. You talked about the facilities in the district, and I'm wondering, you've had, I think, three attempts at bond levies in recent years. Any thought about putting that on the table in some form again?
Well, I mean, I think it's a good conversation to have with, you know, really about kind of what we're doing. And I think what we learned with the first three is this. It wasn't the right, either the right time or it wasn't the right package for the community. With the community helped us with a facilities assessment and kind of a facilities plan, and the board's looking at that. So I think we have things we can work off of that are interest, the kind of high interest community. The community has let us know these things are of high interest to us. It helps us reprioritize what they may want to see in their schools. You know, we have to continue to have the conversation, both in terms of what we need to do as a school district to make improvements, and possibly where the community might come along and be willing to say, hey, we would support this, for example.
And what about the old main building at RHS?
Now, the old main building is there. It's sparingly used. It is effectively is unused, with one exception, and that is it's still used for weight training, our weights class. But that building that I think has 18 classrooms has really been shelved. And other than the weight training class that's there, that's kind of in the old cafeteria gym space there. It's unused right now. It's unfortunate because it's a beautiful old building, but that building is effectively unused right now.
Now, have you thought about, even while you contemplate the future, taking it down at some point?
Yeah, we it was interesting because, must have been four or five. Well, it's COVID year. We ran the first bond. So 2020, I think, is when we ran that bond. There was a lot of, when we talked about a rebuild of that building, there was a really visceral response with many community members that really felt like it would be jeopardizing the history of our community. As we kind of worked through that process and looking at, you know, what it would cost to either rebuild or redesign, we did some renderings, had some renderings done that really took those architectural features of that building. When people saw that building, a new building that had the same architectural features, we really didn't hear much about that anymore. When we last looked at this, it is much less expensive to rebuild that building. Building was started in 1924 and completed in 1926. So, you know, we're about 100 years old in the building, and it probably would make most sense to rebuild for the next 100 years. But again, that's a conversation with the community if a bond is considered.
So for your financial situation for the district overall, after COVID and during COVID, a lot of money came in, a lot of money went out. Where are you at now?
Well, I think we were I think we were pretty wise with understanding that that money really came in at a grant, right? So I think where many organizations have struggled across the state, I'll pick on Oregon, a lot of school districts struggled with the end of this funding. And it had an ending to it. So we were pretty smart about trying to spend money like a grant, if you would. We definitely spent some money on people, but we did spend some money on kind of one-time purchases like, you know, infrastructure. So we're doing okay. We knew that money would scale down. We did receive some news. In fact, all PERS employers in Oregon received some news, and there are about 900 of them. late October that was a little bit troubling. It'll put some pressure on school districts and cities and counties around PERS. The PERS rates are going to make they'll be ticking up, and so we have a close eye on that. You know, moving into this new biennium, the 25-27 biennium. So it'll again, we've done some careful budgeting and planning. We've been pretty good stewards of saving some money. We can offset some of the costs, but the costs will probably cause most financial impact in terms of some reductions.
Now, what about staffing? Are you having issues finding certain positions?
You know, for the most part, we're fully staffed, which is great. We did some contract work a couple years ago. We were able to settle a contract that has really helped with retention and people feeling like they, you know, want to be here and see their future here. We do have, typically for us, there are going to be positions in our special education department that are specific. They're kind of high needs and kind of narrow in their band. Those are the ones that have been still a little difficult to fill. They're in high demand everywhere. But overall, I think we're about 99% staffed district-wide.
Now, for the school district, you've got a board. What kinds of things are they working on right now?
Well, lots. There's lots to do. I think their minds have turned. We've got a budget process coming up here shortly as we move into the spring. And so getting a sense of that. And the long-range facilities planning we've been doing is also, you know, kind of front on their desk right now to take a look at what does the community expect in buildings? Where are we at with our own budget? What is it we need to be thinking about in the future? So I would say probably budget right now and facilities are two of those things. Academics, though, I'll just repeat, is always going to be something that they focus on. It's important to the board. We have an interesting relationship, our board, and a really strong relationship. It's a high accountability relationship, which I love. And so we do expect and demand improvement in terms of students' academic outcomes. And there's a narrative sometimes in Oregon that kids, that we've somehow reduced the expectations of kids. And I'll say in our school district, that could not be further from the truth. If we want kids to really appreciate education and learning, it needs to be rigorous. And so I would say I would put academic rigor in there as well with the board.
Now, January, School Board Appreciation Month, what could you tell us there?
Yeah, so the state's kind of set aside January as a day to just thank these board members. Being on a school board is oftentimes complicated. There are non-paid positions, and it is great service. They are really kind of local heroes, in my opinion, for being involved in the work of supporting schools. And schools can be complex between, you know, budgets and expectations and state law and federal law and all the things. And so it is great. I hope boards across the state feel appreciated. But the state set aside January as School Board Appreciation Month. So I would encourage all of our listeners to, if you get a chance to run into a board member, send them a message, thank them for their service.
As I go through my email and see different volunteer opportunities with schools or cities or the county government, different levels of government, even the state, it's really rare to have a volunteer position that is so exhaustive in terms of the responsibility and just the sheer amount of hours reading things, let alone having meetings.
No, there's no doubt. I mean, there's a, you know, I think about board chairs, for example. Our chair, Chair Minor, our vice chair, Chair Cotton, they spend hours and hours and hours a week. In fact, they spent multiple hours with me already this week, and it's Tuesday. And that's in addition to board meetings and other subcommittee meetings. And so we really appreciate people who have an interest in supporting kids and the community by being board members. And it's great to have a month each year to say, hey, let's take a moment to recognize those board members.
Anything big that you're looking forward to in the remainder of the school year?
You know, I think my biggest joy comes, you know, when kids are excited to learn and they see, you know, why they're there. Again, I'll just say this. We have an incredible generation of kids we're working with. One thing I'm really excited about is just to continue to see our community realize what great students we have. And I was in a meeting the other day with a couple of business leaders, and they are so excited about partnering with our students. And it's so interesting and also really endearing to hear them just gush over, we've got incredible kids in this community. And so I think more of those things coming up where our business leaders can get to know our kids and see the talent they have are what I'm looking forward to.
All right, Superintendent Jared Croydon of Roseburg Public Schools, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.